Doom do 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 doom do do. Doom do 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 doom do do. Hi, plant people. Welcome to episode 44 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hiya, plant friends. I hope you all had wonderfully planty weeks. I am super excited about today's episode, or should I say the first part of the two-part series that I'll be bringing you with NSC Tropicals for the next 2 weeks on, you guessed it, Aeroid 101. Aeroids are all over Instagram, and I have been super curious about them because they have this amazing variety of sexy prehistoric-looking leaves, and I've been a little bit intimidated to bring them into my home besides the general aeroids that I already have, like my philodendrons and my monsteras. But the interesting thing is many aeroids actually make great houseplants because many of them are low light tolerant, and also they all have these large, gorgeous, beautiful foliage that give you that urban jungle vibe. So I'm super excited that Enid, the founder of NSC Tropicals, has agreed to come on for this two-part series. NSC Tropicals is the online mecca for aeroids and other unusual plants, and Enid enlightens us on the wonderful, wild, and wide world of aeroids over the course of these next two episodes. You are going to be shocked at how many of the common plants that we have in our households actually fall under the aeroid family. So, NSC Tropicals is an online plant shop that has some of the most rare and unusual plants on the internet. Enid founded NSC Tropicals 18 years ago as a hobby, and it just unfolded and turned into one of the go-to resources for exotic plants on the interwebs. Enid is an avid collector of aeroids and other hard-to-find plants, and she even served as the president of the International Aeroid Society, so this lady knows what she's talking about. She gives us so much amazing information, both general and very specific, over this two-part episode series. And I'm just so excited to share our planty conversations with you. So the way this two-part series is going to work is today's episode, part one, is going to focus on the general information about the aeroid or Araceae family, its history, what plants actually fall under the aeroid name and distinction, some general care information, and general troubleshooting. Then make sure you're subscribed on your preferred podcast player because part two, which is going to air next week, will take a deeper look at the specific aeroids that make the best houseplants and their specific care information, troubleshooting, and lots of amazing other planty anecdotes that Enid shares with us. We even dive into aquatics for a very brief moment next week, so make sure that you turn into both episodes. Just so you know, I'm going to mispronounce pretty much every plant we discuss in this episode, as per usual when it comes to me. But so you know, their proper spelling and their photos are all going to be in the blog associated with today's episode, which you can find at bloomandgrowradio.com/aeroid101_1. The link is also going to be in the show notes for this podcast episode. And I would say that since we're talking about such a wide variety of plants, you might want to go click that link and take a look at what we're actually discussing. Although I do give my best effort to describe the leaves and plants to you, but it gets a little dicey sometimes. And while we're on the topic of the blog, for those of you who might be new listeners to Bloom and Grow Radio, I just wanted to let you know that we have a free online garden club that you can join by heading over to bloomandgrowradio.com/garden-club. The link will be in the show notes. And when you join, you get the super secret password to our exclusive Facebook community, which is what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. You get a free download of the amazing Molly Mansfield Keep Blooming print, and you'll get occasional emails from me with lots of awesome resources on how to bloom and grow our jungles and ourselves as plant parents. All right, plant friends, I'm so excited to bring this two-part episode series to you, but before that, I'm even more excited to tell you about today's sponsor, Modern Sprout. So, if you've listened to the show, you know that I've been a big fan of Modern Sprout for a very long time. So, I've been using their grow lights for almost a year now, and I can't even tell you how much joy these lights have brought me, not only for how easy they are to set up and how beautiful they look in my apartment, but for how much they've helped my plants. So, all of their lights are going to be the broad spectrum white LED lights. They look like any other light in my apartment and blend in seamlessly. And one of my favorite things about these lights is that they come with a three-setting timer that provides low to full light settings depending on whatever plants you want to put under them. and it automatically turns on and off. So I literally installed the light, picked the setting that I want, and I never think about it. They just go on and off every day. It's awesome. So I love the lights, but I also have to tell you, I have been loving growing their hydroponic grow kits of non-GMO organic herbs. So I'm currently growing the garden jars with basil, sage, and mint in their grow house in my kitchen, and it has been so fun. You grow the herbs from seed with these grow kits, which has been really fun, something I haven't done, and it's been fun to watch the basil seed sprout faster than the sage, which is faster than the mint. Just a nice reminder that we're all blooming and growing at our own rate. In addition to those organic herbs, you can also grow flowering plants like pansies, daisies, or lavender. So there's really something for everyone. Give the gift of growth this year, my plant friends, with their grow kits or their grow lights. These garden jars would make the perfect gift for really anyone that you think could benefit from a little green in their life. So, Modern Sprout is offering Bloom and Grow listeners 15% off of your next purchase with them with the code BLOOM at checkout. So head over to modernsprout.com and go check out the amazing grow lights and grow kits that I love. Check out the variety of herbs and the variety of styles that you can choose from and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off. All right, who's ready to learn about aeroids? Do you have upcoming travel to a different country scheduled, or maybe you have a relative or a friend who speaks a different language that you want to connect with on a deeper level? Why not easily learn a new language with my favorite language learning tool, Rosetta Stone? I recently went to Italy and I brushed up on my Italian by using the Rosetta Stone app for like 20 minutes every morning. It was so easy to use. It was part of my morning practice. It was really fun. And let me tell you, Rosetta Stone works. It brushed me up so good. I was getting around Italy easily speaking Italian after putting those reps in. If you don't already know, Rosetta Stone is the trusted language learning tool available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone has 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered. It makes language learning so fun, so easy, and so fast. It immerses you in the language, which is the fastest way to learn. So it's an intuitive process with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. It even coaches you on pronunciation with its true accent feature, which is like basically having a physical trainer for your accent. It's so wild. The desktop and app options make it so easy to do consistently, and it's an amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages forever for any and all trips and language needs in your entire life. So this year I brushed up on my Italian, but next year Billy and I want to go to Japan so we could learn conversational Japanese with it. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone has to offer, and right now they're offering 50% off. It's an insane steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Growing Joy with Plants listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life, plant friends. It's an insane deal. Redeem 50% off at Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, stone.com/today. Hi, Enid. Welcome to Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hi, how are you?
I am so good, and I am so excited to have you on the show. You've kind of been a dream guest of mine, actually, for a while, and I finally, like, got the confidence to kind of reach out to you and see if you'd come talk aeroids with me.
Oh, I appreciate the invitation.
Aeroids, as I've told you previously, are pretty intimidating to me, especially a few of the ones that are really hot right now. So I'm excited to kind of dive in and talk about this amazing sect of plants that you have kind of made your life's work and passion.
Well, they're a really exciting group of plants, and they can really range from little tiny plants to big giant plants. So there's something for everybody in that genus.
There really is. And before we dive into the amazing, wonderful world of aeroids, I would love to just kind of hear about the world of Enid and your experience with plants. Like, how did NSE Tropicals come to be?
Well, it's kind of funny. It was, you know, I always liked plants, and I was looking online and kind of found eBay, probably about 18 years ago is when I started this. And I would buy plants, and there weren't that many sellers selling plants back then on eBay, but I would buy plants and they would grow. And I would divide them and make more plants and buy more plants with that money. So I just kept kind of, it just grew from there, literally.
And when you were first starting, so where do you live?
In Plantation, Florida.
In Florida. So were you first buying them for your outdoor collection, like for landscaping or for your houseplant collection? It sounds like it was kind of a passion that turned into a business.
Absolutely. Actually, I don't have any houseplants.
I love that.
Mine are all free. Mine are all free outside. I actually do have frog terrariums, mm-hmm. and there's plants in those. So maybe I'm lying. I do have houseplants. They're in the terrariums with the frogs.
That's so fun. It's actually always interesting talking to different shop owners and people in the plant business. And some people really keep their homes pretty free of plants because they're tending to so many plants in their businesses or their plant shops or, you know, whatever installations they're doing. I always think that's so interesting. So you start on eBay buying plants for yourself and then separating them and selling them. And when did NSC officially kind of become a thing where you were really selling for profit instead of just like funding your plant passion?
I guess it was kind of gradual. Mm-hmm. And I already owned the name Natural Selections from a vitamin company I had started a long time ago. And so since it was just this temporary idea in my mind, I kind of just used that name since I already owned it. And it kind of evolved from there. And the plants kept growing and I kept having more of them. And I would see the prices things went for on eBay and think, oh my God, I have 10 of those, you know, in the yard already.
I'm always so jealous of people who live in Florida that can just keep their tropical plants in their yard, like monsteras outside. But right, yeah,
we're spoiled. We are very spoiled down here. If we get a cold day, the whole town shuts down. We mm-hmm. all start running in circles.
So funny. So yeah, it seems like you've always gravitated towards, I mean, what I know NSC Tropicals to be is super rare, interesting tropical plants. Like you're not just going to find like a pothos on your site. You're really selling the really interesting like aglaonemas and anthuriums and stuff. So have you always gravitated towards the rare stuff?
I have. It's more interesting to me. And if I can buy 70 at any given moment, then mm-hmm. I don't really want it. Because if everyone can have it, then you know what? It's not as much fun for you if it's everywhere, I think.
And what does the E stand for in NSC Tropical? So Natural Selections.
Exotics.
Natural Selections Exotics. Oh, I love that. So I think that also NSC has kind of taken off in the last year. So you've always kind of been online selling your rare aroids, but what has kind of the shift been lately?
You know what? The eBay auctions have always gone high, and that's really the only reason I do it. But the shift was two things. In the past year, I started doing a newsletter a little over a year ago and having three items for sale and trying to do a little, couple of paragraph article. And because I had 9,000 previous customers that I wasn't ever even contacting them. Mm-hmm. And I was actually afraid to because I don't have several of most things. You know, and so if I tell 9,000 people about something, if even a half of a percent want them, I don't have that much stuff. So I started trying to do these little sale flyers and that made a huge difference. And then also this year I started doing Instagram, which was another major, it just brought so much attention that I've gotten to where I'm afraid to post because then I get 100 messages and I can't keep up with it.
It doesn't hurt too that you have like the sexiest of all the Instagram worthy plants, you know, with all of these rare foliage plants.
That's what it is too. It's the pictures and it's mm-hmm. like a dream, you know, everybody's dream to have these big giant plants, whether it's a picture that's taken in South America or it's at a botanical garden or it's here. It's just like, it's a dream. These big perfect leaves like that, they're just so beautiful.
So do you have a green? Because I know you grow most of the plants that you sell, right?
Right.
So where are you growing them all? Do you have a greenhouse?
I have one, two, three shade houses where it's just shade cloth mm-hmm. overhead. And then a greenhouse, which is a plastic roof. Okay. And that's actually air conditioned rather than heated, because it's plastic in Florida is a...
Oh my God, it must be brutal. And the shade cloth, so can rain go through that shade cloth?
Yes, we get a lot of rain in the summer, but also it's the rain is magical. And, you know, my chlorinated city water is not a good substitute for this rainwater. So
you are actually growing all of the crazy stuff you grow on site, which is obviously why you have such limited edition. And since you're in the rare stuff, it's not like you're a plant shop that can just make a plant run to a, or use a plant broker. It's like you're who those people are going to buy those plants, those rare plants, really, when you think about
it. Well, there are some things that I can source and I can find. And, you know, it's almost like there are a few places that I go that I just think sometimes like, I got to have something on the website. Mm-hmm. I need something on here. And so there are places I can go, but generally if I've put it on sale, it's something I can get more of.
In your experience, what is the top like 5 or 6 plants that have like gone like crazy been? Or maybe what are your most requested plants lately these days?
Most requested, I know this isn't an aeroid, but Calathea mosaica.
Okay.
It's huge right now. Raphidophora tetrasperma.
So hot right now.
Oh, everybody wants. And that used to go by the name Philodendron Jenny. G-I-N-N-Y, but it's a Raphidophora, or mini Monstera. And it was a plant that was everywhere down here many years ago, and people just never gave it a second look. I don't know how long it's been going on, a year, where it just became the thing. Everybody wants it because it stays a reasonable size. It has that tropical look, and it seems to do well indoors, and it's just a great plant. And I have a batch of them going, but, you know, I need more than a couple of leaves. I try to get it to be a good enough size to be a pleasing plant when you open it. Philodendron Pink Princess is really popular, and mm-hmm. variegated monsteras. They just seem to be, if I had only those items.
I know you have the famous variegated monstera wait list.
Yes.
I know. I got really lucky. I mentioned that I really wanted a Raphidophora tetrasperma, and I had one. My listeners reached out and offered to send me a cutting of theirs. I got so lucky. It's sitting right next to me right now as we do this interview.
A lot of the houseplant community is so generous and shares with each other so everyone can have their dream plants.
Mm-hmm. It is really cool. My listener, Bethany, who sent it to me, she said that she likes to just be people's like planty fairy godmother. And when she can send people stuff, she does. I just think that's so sweet. Okay, so Calathea, Raphidophora, Tetrasperma, Philodendron, Pink Princess, Variegated Monsteras. And then you have a really wide range of anthuriums right now, which I feel like are really popular too, right?
Absolutely. I'm trying to think anthurium-wise. Anthurium vitii is always popular. And I used to have 2 sizes. Now I had small and large, but I just have small at this point because they're so popular. I can't mm-hmm. get them large.
And you're growing everything from seed?
No, divisions.
Seed, of course,
cuttings,
right.
Mm-hmm. Whatever I can do. In the spring and summer, we can be pretty aggressive with cuttings. Anything will grow.
And where did you learn all of this? Like, have you just kept gathering information? Do you have a degree in horticulture? Like, how do you just know how to specialize in this specific type of plant?
You got to kill a lot of plants.
Right?
Or two things.
Right.
Okay, I won't do that again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've had things that worked one year that didn't work the next year. I was talking about some cuttings I did of a variegated sea grape recently, and I did them in January, which is the last time you should do a cutting,
mm-hmm.
and they all took. And then I did some more in June, and none of them took. So it's just funny that you just sometimes they don't follow the rules.
So you've just really learned through trial and error, and I'm sure research. Do you have any like resources that you recommend to people who want to learn more about aeroids after listening to this episode?
Actually, the International Aeroid Society, which
yes.
is aeroid.org, there's a lot of information there. And then there's a lot of contact information for other people that have similar interests and that may have information. Plus, there's been a lot of growers when I first started that put up with me and all my questions in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important that kind of information is passed on, because as we lose more and more of these collectors, there's fewer and fewer places to get information. And Google can be great, but it's not always correct information just because it's in print on the computer.
Yeah, totally. And I think that is important, like the act of paying it forward and like sharing your knowledge. And as you gain your knowledge, making sure that, you know, you honor those people that were patient with you when you were starting and being patient with other people. I do think that's a really important part of storytelling just in general.
Right, right. And it's always fun, I think. I have plants that came with a story, you know, there would be a funny backstory on the plant. So, you know, every time I see the plant, I think of when I got it or, you know, the experience of that day going to this nursery and finding this plant.
Oh, totally. Oh, totally. I mean, I find now that a lot of my plants are cuttings from friends or maybe traded with friends. And when they have the like energy of something else like that, like some sort of emotional attachment to it, it really does make it so much more special.
Absolutely. And then it goes the other way, too. Many years ago, I was at a friend's collection and he had this nice anthurium. And he said, do you want that? And I said, yeah, you don't want that? He says, oh, the guy that I got it from overcharged me and he was really rude to me. And I every time I see that plant, it reminds me of that day and I don't want to look at it. When I walk around that my garden, mm-hmm. every time I see that plant, even though it was a beautiful plant, it would upset him because of the
emotional attachment to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so real. I love that.
Yeah.
So I think it's time to just dive in. So for someone like me who is intimidated about aroids or maybe just doesn't really understand how vast and wide the aroid family actually is, can you kind of just give us a definition for what an aroid is and maybe the plants that fall under it and how we can best understand how to know when we are maybe dealing with an aroid in our collection?
Well, usually it's the inflorescence that makes something an aroid, which is like the collection of flowers. So an inflorescence is more like a collection of flowers. And it's the structure of that inflorescence that makes it an aroid. They have a spadix and then a spathe around it. So the spadix is like...
It's like kind of a cylinder that has spikes on it, right?
Well, not so much spikes. It's kind of like a finger sticking
right.
up, and then a hood around it is mm-hmm. the more general structure of it. And then, you know, they vary, but it's that general structure, kind of like a finger with a hood around it. And that is what makes it an aroid, is if they have that type of inflorescence.
Okay, inflorescence. And that inflorescence is the flower, quote unquote, of the plant.
Correct, right. In fact, I usually just say flower, which is incorrect, but that's
right.
usually, you know, layman's terms.
Because that was something I definitely didn't understand starting out. But then, like, my peperomia have an inflorescence, but they are not aroids, right?
Right. Well, they don't have the spathe around it.
Right.
So a lot of things can have inflorescences, but...
It's the combination of the spathe around, the hood around the... inflorescence.
Or the spadix.
The spadix around the inflorescence. Okay, cool. Pronunciation.
I know.
Plant facts, plant Latin. I'm gonna do a separate episode on plant Latin because I just know that I need it. And actually, because we're speaking about plant Latin, so the kingdom is plants and then the family is right under kingdom and that's the Araceae family, right? That's what aroids are.
Right.
Then under the aroid family, there are all sorts of different kind of subsects of the family, right?
Correct.
And are those called genus or are those called species?
So you have genus, and then that's going to be Philodendron, Anthurium, Raphidophora. That's genus. And then species, let's say if it was Philodendron Chordatum is the species.
Got it. Okay, thank you for clarifying that. I think that's going to be very helpful as we dive in and talk about all sorts of different plants today. Have I been pronouncing Raphidophora wrong my whole life?
You know what? I've heard it both ways.
You say Raphidophora?
Right. I used to say Raphidophora, and then I was corrected.
Okay.
And my problem is mostly since I'm online and I'm reading a lot, I don't necessarily hear it out loud. So...
And it's hard. Latin, it's so many syllables.
I know. And then I don't know how anyone decides what's correct, you know, what makes it correct.
Totally. I know. I'll let you know how my Plant Latin episode interview goes. Maybe we can trade notes. So do aroids all come from the same climate in nature, or are they kind of all spread across all sorts of different natural climates as well?
They're all different types. I mean, there's some that can grow in rivers. There's some that grow in cooler, drier climates. There's aquatic ones. There's some that are growing in rainforest conditions, which I think that's what we expect of an aroid, is mm-hmm. for it to grow hot and warm. But then there's a lot of high elevation aroids that, for me, I can't do much with them just because it's just too hot in Florida. They want to be
really
65 to 70 degrees tops all the time. So those guys are tough. But those are the most beautiful ones, the ones you can't grow.
So do you have kind of general thoughts on aroids in general? It's like such a large family, but any like kind of general ideas, thoughts, tips on care, that kind of stuff before we kind of break down the different genus?
The main thing with them is just humidity.
Okay.
And they need shady conditions, some of them brighter than others, and quality water, but with good drainage. You know, when I say they need water, I don't mean they need water and to sit wet, most of them. I mean, there's aquatic aroids, obviously, mm-hmm. but you just don't want them sitting wet. You're better off underwatering them than over, because they can recover from underwatering. Once they're overwatered and they get some kind of rot, once you rot, that's the beginnings of death. But dry, you can save them from that.
Okay. So when you say good draining soil, do you mean like, does a standard kind of indoor potting mix that has perlite and that kind of stuff, like, is that okay if it's a standard indoor draining potting mix?
Yeah, if it drains well, it's good. You can even add like orchid bark and charcoal and stuff. I know a lot of the houseplant group has their own mixes that they like to kind of play with, but you know, the looser the mix, the better. They really don't want to be boggy.
Okay. And filtered water. So you do really recommend the filtered water?
My city water here is very chlorinated, mm-hmm. you know, quality water. It doesn't have to be filtered. But then, you know, if you've got some bottled water that you'd be drinking yourself, that's probably a good idea. A lot of people have a lot of calcium in their water or have a lot of different iron, or, you know, there's places you can get your water tested if you keep having issues.
I'm so stubborn because I'm like, my plants can't drink fancier water than I do, because New York has pretty good filtered water. But I do notice that all my terracotta has white calcium on the outsides of it. And so I'm like, okay, maybe I should experiment with a little bit more of a filtration system for my water, like collect the rainwater on my roof or something.
Well, rainwater is always the best you can do if you have access to that.
Okay, so I have a couple of general questions. So the thing that I think is so cool about aroids is they're like, quote unquote, flower, or we want to say that inflorescence in spadix is not the most remarkable part of the plant. Like, the most remarkable thing about most aroids is the incredible foliage that they have.
There's a few exceptions. You know, we have the flowering anthuriums that they use.
Of course. The one you always see at Trader Joe's that has the beautiful red flower.
I find the more impressive the foliage, usually the less impressive the inflorescence flower.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, maybe like, it figures it can't do both.
Yeah, I was at the Botanical Garden in San Diego and I finally saw a Monstera inflorescence. And I was like, oh, like the Monstera leaves are so amazing. And the inflorescence is cool, but it's kind of unremarkable. I mean, it was amazing how big it was because the plant was really big. But it like wasn't anything to like really write home about, which I thought was interesting.
You know what's interesting? I have a variegated Monstera blooming right now by my pool, and the inflorescences are striped. So they're white striped on the... That's cool.
That's cool. So I'm scared of aroids because in like the very beginning of my plant lady-dom, when I was still kind of a plant killer transitioning into plant lady learning how to care for things, I kind of impulse bought a caladium. I thought it was so beautiful. I thought the foliage was so beautiful. And it had these like, you know, tiny little stems of a stem that had this big head of foliage on it. And I didn't care for it properly. I didn't understand the light in my apartment, so I just put it in like way too low light, and slowly like all of the foliage fell and the plant kind of died. So how do these plants stand so erect when some of them have the biggest leaves and the smallest stems? Like, is that a question you ever get?
I haven't had that question.
It's something I just like marvel at sometimes. You know what I mean?
I know. Especially some of these things can have 6-foot leaves. It's amazing.
It's wild. Yeah.
It won't snap the leaf off.
Mm-hmm.
They do tend to be able to stand up better if they have proper light.
Okay.
I did read something one time saying that for anthuriums, and I don't know if this translates to all aroids, but if they're holding their leaf to where the face of their leaf is facing up,
mm-hmm.
they're trying to get more light. And if they're holding it straight down, they've kind of got enough light. And if they're kind of at an angle, that's where you want them to be. And I don't know how specific that is or how that really relates indoors when there's no sun overhead, but that they will adjust the leaves trying to get some light. You know, when you put them near a window, trying to lean towards the light or lean away from the light sometimes if you've got them near a window.
Well, and in my like middle to bright light, I have southern facing windows, and 100% I've noticed my plants will sense where the light is coming from and they will move their leaves.
Yes.
It's kind of spooky.
If you've ever seen someone do any of that, what do you call it? Stop motion or slow motion?
Mm-hmm. Oh, like house plant journal. Yeah, it's wild. It's nature just constantly like blows my mind / freaks me out at the same time. Okay, so for my caladium, it was definitely that I wasn't giving it enough light. But then I just noticed like the stems just got so weak. They just like toppled right over. But when you have like a healthy, you know, I'm looking at my Raphidophora and my Monstera and they have these nice long stems, but they're like sticking straight out, like so strong.
Well, another thing is caladiums, and there's a lot of other aroids, go dormant in the fall and winter. So sometimes people might think they killed something, but in reality, it's time for them to go dormant and they've got a bulb. And as long as you don't water too much when they're dormant, they just pop up in the spring when it's the growing season again. And those plants generally come from areas where there's a definite dry season.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're kind of, it's just their way of conserving energy until it's time to grow again.
You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit because a listener wrote in asking about that. So what are the types of aroids that go dormant? Is there kind of a rule of thumb for that?
Caladiums, Amorphophallus, some alocasias will do that. There's another genus called Synandrospadix.
Okay.
It's a cool plant that's got a really interesting inflorescence, but it can be kind of poisonous. You're not supposed to handle it too much, but it's a really pretty plant.
Oh, goodness.
Weird pretty.
So when they go dormant, so they've had beautiful foliage, maybe they've had an inflorescence or two in the spring and summer, and in the fall, I notice that it's starting to go dormant, the leaves are starting to fall, they're starting to droop over. How do I prepare that plant for its dormancy, and also is there a way to the listener question was, is there a way to avoid the dormancy?
It's kind of, they know the days are getting shorter. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it can be triggered by cold weather. Sometimes it's day length. So even if you had it at 90 degrees, it knows mm-hmm. the days are not long enough. It's short time of year, you know.
So to prepare it for the dormancy, do you cut the foliage back, like, to so that the pot almost looks like it doesn't have a plant in it?
Well, this is a tough one to me because I don't want this big, ugly, yellow flopped over plant. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's absorbing the energy from the leaves back into the bulb. So while it looks terrible, mm-hmm. so if I don't have a lot of dormant things anymore, mm-hmm. the things that go dormant, I don't want it laying across my other plants. And, you know, if I have a big giant sheet house and it has a patch of yellow in the middle of it, it just drives me crazy.
Yeah.
And I want to take that out of there, but I try to let it, especially I have some real big Amorphophallus and they're kind of draining the nutrients back into the bulb or the tuber that's below the soil. And if you're not going to kill the plant by taking the leaves off, but it's kind of like just a little bit of extra nutrition to get through the winter. And the bulb will be bigger the following year if you leave it alone.
Wow, that's so interesting. So does it need light when it's dormant? Like does the bulb need light on the leaves to be absorbing that energy? Or is it the type of thing where you could take it while it's dormant and like put it under your kitchen sink or like completely deprive it of light?
When it's dormant, you could absolutely, and that's nice because nobody wants to look at a pot.
Because if it's unsightly, right, you could just kind of pile the leaves, the dead leaves in the pot and then stick it under, you know, in a cabinet or like out of sight and put something else in there for the, you know, in the windowsill for the winter.
That's a great idea. Well, I've actually seen people that had some kind of other plant in there with it, maybe some kind of little pilea or peperomia that is hanging over, you know what I mean? And then you have that plant as well. But absolutely, they don't need light. People store them in their basement or, you know, nobody wants a bunch of pots of looks like dead plants all over their
house. I know. That's funny. Okay, cool. So I'm just thinking about with my caladium what I probably did wrong. So I think number one, I overwatered it. And then number two, I didn't give it light because I had read that they go dormant. And I cut the foliage back. And I was like, well, I'll leave the bulbs in the soil and I'll put this, you know, I'll put them back in the light. And just as an experiment, because I really didn't know what I was doing, stuck the pot outside this summer, but nothing grew back. But when I touched the bulbs, I don't know if they were mushy, but they felt, they didn't feel firm. You know what I mean? So what I probably did was overwater and the bulbs rotted.
We'll see. And then that's how you learn right there. Now
that's
you know.
That's how you learn.
To grow it, to not do what you did the last time, and eventually you figure out what works for that plant. And then I have, for example, alocasias that if I even get too much rainwater on them, they rot on me. And I gave some of them to my neighbor a few years ago and didn't tell her how to grow them. I just was like, here, take these. And she put them in a pot without holes in it in the full sun, and it was full of water because it was raining all the time.
Right.
And here's this thing is growing aquatically in the full sun, and that is not how it grows. And
it
was growing like that. And I said, I shouldn't tell you. It's not supposed to grow like that.
Because if it's doing well,
right.
Plants are amazing.
I can't tell you. Look, she's doing it wrong, but look at it.
Well, and that goes to show you too. And I've talked about this on other episodes. Like, it's so important to do your research. It's so important not to just do it. Like, to me, it's so important for me to stop impulse buying stuff and like really understanding what I'm bringing home to prevent myself from killing it like I did with that caladium. But sometimes the plants are just going to do what they want. You know, like you can do all your research, but sometimes like the plant is just going to thrive aquatically when it shouldn't be. And like there's no way for you to explain that. And sometimes the plant, even if you care for it perfectly, might die because it's just not the right plant for your space. Like, and there's really nothing you can do. Like, it's just also in plant care is so interesting.
Absolutely. And sometimes even if there was something you could have done to save it, mm-hmm. it might be too late by the time.
Right.
You try, by the time you notice a problem, sometimes if you have rot, mm-hmm. by the time you notice that the soil was too wet, it's kind of already rotted.
So with the bulbs, are most aroids bulbs or are most of them normal? Like, what is their, is there a commonality with their root systems as well?
Along the different genuses, they can be pretty similar. Anthuriums okay. have more of like a, kind of like a rhizome or a, yes. like fleshy roots, not so much
like a snake
bulb.
Plant kind of.
A little more like that. Than, okay. You know, like a caladium is just a, like a little onion you can actually take out of the soil and go stick it under your kitchen counter too, once mm-hmm. it's dormant.
Right. But like Monstera has normal roots, like philodendron, normal roots, Raphidophora. I don't want to say normal, but like the roots that we all know from most of our houseplants.
Right, right.
Are there any general kind of troubleshooting questions you get?
Maybe some browning leaves for indoor is pretty common. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a matter of the plant just getting used to its new environment. And I've found there's plants that I've imported and then they're living here, which is unnatural. And then they're going to Wisconsin, which is unnatural. And it's a miracle that they do as well as they do mm-hmm. being constantly, you know, moved to a different environment. But sometimes if they're in a low humidity kind of environment, they can get some browning on the edges, you know, and if they're too wet, you can get some yellow or yellow spots or, you know, things like that. And those are probably the most common.
Okay.
What's wrong with my plant type of questions.
Yeah, when my Raphidophora arrived, it was in perfect condition because Bethany knows what she's doing in Florida. And I stuck it in water just to let it kind of adjust to my house and then potted it up. And immediately the edges of the leaves started turning brown and I had like a full out panic attack because I was like, no, like I've wanted this plant for so long and I'm killing it. But it totally, I mean, my apartment in New York is naturally going to be so much drier than someone's apartment in Tampa, Florida. So
right.
that, you know, it definitely went through its adjustment period, a very stressful week for me,
for both of us.
But then I found it adjusted. I did end up trimming some of the brown edges off the plant just because I kind of thought it looked bad, but I didn't want to take the whole leaf off. And it seems to be doing fine now. Like it didn't seem bothered that I like kind of cut the brown edges off because I also kind of wanted to track if the brown was spreading or if it was just a little like sign for more humidity. And I put it on a moss pole that is hopefully helping with some ambient humidity as well. And it's doing much better now, but it was totally an adjustment phase.
And that's a great idea with a moss pole, because like you said, that helps with humidity. You're going to usually, with most aeroids that climb, you're going to end up with bigger, better leaves too. Mm-hmm. If they have, it's like, they know they have support to hold up the leaves. They will get bigger leaves, philodendrons. And anthuriums can look so different when they're juvenile versus when they're full grown or even just more mature leaves. And it's just amazing to watch the transformation from, you know, something 6 inches tall to 6 feet tall. It's like you would swear it was two completely different plants.
It's wild. And I think that's the thing with having houseplants is like, how can we best replicate their conditions outdoors? And outdoors, they're climbing on things. So why not make a moss pole? And that's why a few episodes ago, we had how to make your own moss poles with Tyler, who you know from Arium Botanicals or your local plant boy on Instagram.
Yes, yes.
So that actually brings up another great question. So with philodendrons specifically, but other aeroids as well, you see them as hanging trailing plants or as climbing plants. So in nature, their philodendrons are climbing, right? So is it okay to be having these plants in hanging baskets when they in nature are supposed to be climbing up stuff?
You'll get larger leaves if they're climbing. Even those trailing things, they mm-hmm. want to climb, and that's kind of why they're hanging. They're hoping to find something they can climb. Mm-hmm. And they would normally, like even the ones I have in the yard here, if they get to the ground or they're looking for something else to climb, they start kind of putting out these, I just assume it's like an energy conservation kind of thing, type of leaves, where it might have had a 4 foot leaf on it, but now it's kind of putting out these little arrow shaped small leaves as it's looking for something else to climb, maybe the weight or whatever. They'll just start kind of scrambling around, but they will absolutely get bigger if they've got a totem. But not all philodendrons climb. Some of them are more of a bird's nest type of form, where they just kind of come up in like a rosette rather than climbing.
All right, plant friends, a little abrupt, but that concludes part one of our two-part episode on Aeroid 101 with NSC Tropicals. Friends, make sure you are subscribed on your preferred podcast player so you don't miss the second half of the episode that airs next week, because let me tell you, we have just barely gotten started. In next week's episode, we're going to take a deeper look at philodendrons, alocasias, anthuriums, raphidophora, Tetrasperma, however the heck I'm supposed to pronounce it, Monstera, and we even briefly get into aquatic aeroids. You are not going to miss all of the juicy information that Enid shares with us. Thanks again to Modern Sprout for sponsoring today's episode. We love you, Modern Sprout. To get yourself some of their hydroponic planters with organic non-GMO herbs and flowers or one of their beloved grow lights, visit modernsprout.com and enter code BLOOM at checkout to get 15% off. All right, plant friends, until next week, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you want to join the Bloom and Grow Garden Club, head over to bloomandgrowradio.com/garden-club to join the planty fun. When you join, you get a free download of the Keep Blooming print that Molly Mansfield made exclusively for us, and you will also get an email with the password to the private Facebook group, which is what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is pretty amazing. For behind-the-scenes scoop, plant tips I learn along the way, and sneak peeks of future episodes, follow me on Instagram at @bloomandgrowradio. And plant friends, I'm here for you, so drop me a line if you have an idea for an episode, live event, or maybe if you're a planty business looking to sponsor the show. I am always here to help you keep blooming and keep growing. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, plant friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up, so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya, and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free plant parent personality test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right house plants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.